last session of the ASA meeting. And our first speaker, this is Physical Sciences. And our first speaker is Martin Price. He was the founding CEO of ECHO International, an organization that fights world hunger through education. And he's now a retired volunteer. And today, Martin is going to talk about a quick overview of practical, low-cost options for helping rural poor in developing countries.
And if you could speak up, because we don't have a microphone.
I haven't been in this room to hear a speaker, but they tell me that it's very hard to hear. This is as loud as my voice goes. So if you're not understanding me, better come on down here. And when we get to questions and answers, if there's time, if you ask two questions, I'll answer the second one. That's about all I would remember. How, can you hear me back there? Everybody's nodding, the ones that didn't nod couldn't hear me. Yes, I'm while I was working on my doctorate in biochemistry, I had an opportunity to visit some missionaries, and to make a long story short, I began thinking, what would my career look like if it was oriented toward using, bringing glory to God and the blessing of mankind by using science and technology to help the poor? That ended up in a more than a 10-year odyssey of career changes and so forth, and then finally it all pulled together in 1981 when my wife Bonnie and I arrived at a little 5-acre farm in Fort Myers. Over the 36 years or so of operation, ECHO has just grown far beyond what we ever expected. Today it's in both at our Fort Myers, Florida location, but also overseas in East Africa, West Africa, and Southeast Asia. Altogether, ECHO has 75 employees today instead of just us and an intern. This talk is going to be oriented especially toward young people, or people of any age, but more typically it's younger people that are questioning, what do I want my career to look like, and might be exploring the possibility of missions. A lot of Christian colleges now have majors in community development and so forth, but what I'm going to concentrate on is how we can help you if this becomes one of your goals, or for professors, if you have students that are thinking that way, that you'll know what the resources are at ECHO. So let me begin. First, I tell people that come to ECHO to study to think to themselves during that time of having a mental toolbox, so to speak. If a carpenter has a toolbox with a hammer and a chisel and a saw, there's a few things that they might be able to do. But if that toolbox is just full of all kinds of wonderful tools, then you may not know what the next problem is going to be, but you have a lot of resources there. So I'll be going through several different options that might fit in your mental toolbox. And I want you to be able to think of them as something, envision yourself doing some of the things that I'll talk about. And I'm quite certain that none of these options, which have great potential, would be something that you wouldn't be able to do. Just realize I have to turn around here. So I want you to become familiar with potential problems and possible solutions during this talk. But I'll also say some things about ECHO, including our internship program, which some of you might be interested in. So let's just start with one of the ways to think of filling the toolbox is to think about what problems might be out there that someday, since you never know where you might be while you're preparing, might be good for you to know of a simple solution to that. This is a letter that we received several years ago. Echo was fairly young. A woman in Illinois wrote me and said, my family is moving to Indonesia, or one of the nearby countries. It's going to be in a very remote jungle setting. I've been told by people that you can't grow vegetables in a rainforest, but this is so remote. If I can't grow vegetables in the rainforest, how are we going to get food? My answer to her was, your friends are right, you can't grow vegetables, Illinois vegetables, in a rainforest, or very few of them. I learned that the hard way. I was an avid gardener from Ohio when we moved to Florida, and the third day I was down there, I was digging up my first garden. I'd already brought my seeds with me from Ohio. It was early summer, and an older gentleman came by and said, Martin, nobody grows a garden in Florida. It's like winter up north. You just let it grow up to weeds, and then you plant your garden in October. I went ahead and planted it, just like Mom would always surround it with zinnias and marigolds and all the vegetables. Literally, the only thing I got to eat was one radish that was gnarled and hot, and one cantaloupe, which a raccoon ate the night or two before I was planning to eat it. Today I've written a publication on how to garden in Florida in the summer, and there are not many of those that are Illinois vegetables. So I told her that the bad news is you can't grow your Illinois ones. The good news is God made a lot of vegetables that will grow in a rainforest. One of them is the winged bean. By the time it gets this big, those pods are no longer edible. When they're smaller and flexible, they're a very, very good substitute for a green bean. They thrive in a rainforest climate, and they call it sometimes a supermarket on stock because it has leaves that are edible like spinach. Now, when a botanist especially says something is edible, you should be a little suspicious. Why didn't they say it tastes good? For a botanist, edible means it won't kill you. But this one really is good. We had a taste test of several different leaves, but we didn't know which ones were which. And several of us picked the wing bean as the best tasting. The seeds are edible. None of us cared for the seeds, although now there's probably a few ways you could use them. But they have tubers that have up to 8% protein. And the blooms are very tasty, raw or cooked. So that was one of the things that I told her to think about. So could you envision yourself introducing the winged bean to a country where it wasn't growing? In her case, she would have found them when she got there, so it was just alerting her to it. But one of Echo's most important ministries has to do with new kinds of plants and getting them in the right setting. So if you go to equatorial parts of Africa and you're running into this problem of what can you eat, and you read in Echo's material or on the website about the winged bean, you could send us an email, and if you're doing community development work, we'd send you a packet of seeds of the winged bean, or maybe two or three different varieties of winged bean. One reason we just send a little packet is it's easy to do and a lot less expensive, but also if we sent you a pound, you might be tempted to spread it around with several farmers. And then maybe you'd find, oh my land, there is something here. I don't want this really to get loose. That's one of our biggest concerns over the year. Well, if I gave it to 100 farmers or even 10 farmers and it spread out, you might not be able to check on it. So we want you to grow it yourself first, but do care with it. Another problem that is very common is people don't know They live where they can't readily get a hold of medicine for malaria. And if they do get a hold of it, in some cases you can't be sure that that drug really has the active ingredient in it. The United Nations agency did it. Sent some undercover people around Southeast Asia and different countries buying packaged pharmaceutical-grade anti-malarials. In the case of Cambodia, I believe it was, 54% had no active ingredients, or some had just enough that if anybody did a color test, it would show some color. Well, we learned this about this from a German organization. This is Artemisia. I'm told that this is one of Mao Zedong's secrets during the Vietnam War, where malaria was a problem, and they were using the leaves of this plant for their soldiers, because it's an extremely powerful anti-malarial. And in fact, the only one thing we have to worry about with it is don't use it as all the time, because then malaria mosquitoes will get used to it, and the malaria will no longer be controlled. This is the only drug at this point that will cure cerebral malaria. And all you have to do is make a tea out of it. It's extremely bitter, but very effective. I wanted to interrupt here and just say something about what ECHO is like in the internship program. We started out with one intern a year, now we're limiting it to 12 interns a year. It's a 14-month work experience. We treat it very much as we're preparing you to head overseas. If you have no interest in doing that, you'd have no chance of being chosen as an intern. Yes, we benefit from your work, but we are also preparing you, so there's a lot of opportunities, not just to work in a whole variety of settings, learn a whole bunch of new techniques, but there's a couple workshops in the afternoon twice a week where all kinds of staff members and special guests come through and share whatever they're used to that might help you. ECHO interns learn by doing. You have to have a college degree. I know a lot of colleges, undergrads have intern programs. We modeled this more after medical profession. If a guy finishes, or a woman finishes her MD degree, then they do an internship in medicine. So when you're basically done with your college and ready to head overseas, that's when we would be interested in talking to you. We look for people with a vibrant Christian faith. We're a faith-based, science-based organization. Wide range of what branches of the Christian faith that you could be in. But to be an employee, you have to be a Christian. And we're looking for the kind of Christian that is likely, if they're thinking of being a missionary, would have the skill set that would go with that. You need to have legal permit to work in the United States. You need to be considering overseas work. And I would call it internship is enhanced by special training opportunities. Each intern is assigned a section of the farm, which is each section is a certain climate. I don't take time to go into how that works. But then they also have a subspecialty either in nursery and tropical fruit propagation or in seed banking and seed saving techniques where you help us with that part of our work. I'll just make a quick flash through of several slides to show you what our farm is like. We were totally unintended, we became a tourist attraction, and now we're in the Fodor Travel Guide and the British Travel Guide for the United States. We have 10,000 visitors a year. The local university has a required colloquium, and every student that takes that has to come on a guided trip at ECHO. The only thing we have to grow in is sand. It's probably some of the worst soil you can think of if you're planning on being organic, because there's not much nutrients left in there. Here we're making a mountain for one of our display areas. So one intern, the girl at the head there in this case, was the intern one year I took this picture. We made a mountain so that we could illustrate things, both how to plants that would grow at higher elevations and also techniques to keep erosion down. So even though that would be a sand dune, if it was by the ocean, it's been 16 years now, and very little erosion has taken place. Here's another, we'll go back now to options that could make a difference for people. Where I grew up in Ohio, farmers put up hay in the summer, lifting those heavy bales and getting them up in the hay mow. And then in the winter, that becomes the cattle food. Well, in the tropics, where it rains, if you're in a part where it's raining a lot, it's going to be really hard to put up hay, and you probably wouldn't have a place to put it up anyway. So a really important option is to have a forage bank. This is ECHO's forage bank. We have most of the common animals that a small farm would have. Here, during this time of year in Florida, we're just letting them grow. So basically, this is going to be animal feed from the leaves. You need to select very carefully so that there's a lot of tropical trees that would grow really tall, but they also have the ability to grow real close to each other. So that's what we want. We don't want them to get tall. We want them to be tropical trees that people know make good food for cattle, rabbits, or whatever. So here you have several different species as you go up and down that line. Then when the equivalent of our winter would be their dry season, then they just go out every day and cut back whatever leaves they want, and that's the way they feed their animals. This is the book that inspired our involvement with seeds like the winged bean. In fact, this is where I first heard of the winged bean, written by the National Academy of Sciences, called Underexploited Tropical Plants. And that led us, if we're going to have all these seeds, we needed to have some kind of means to make sure the seeds are viable. So our first seeds were in the bottom shelf of the intern's refrigerator. Then we got so many that until a few years ago, we were storing the seeds in a refrigerated shipping container. Now we have an absolute state of the art. Here in Colorado is one of the country's major seed banks with extreme climate control. This would be just under that. In fact, the one here in Colorado has a copy of our collection, so if we're wiped out by a hurricane or something, we could get reestablished quickly. Yeah, 3 minutes? Okay. I'm not going to talk about the problems here. We'll talk about the difficulty of growing vegetables from seed in the tropics. Insects and farm animals tend to eat the seedlings. It's a lot of work for a farmer in ill health to plow and plant and weed a garden, or maybe even to bend down to work in the garden. The vegetables may die if several days go without rain. And it may be hard to find good seeds. So there are plants you want to grow that way, but there's an alternative. It's called perennial vegetables. Perennial means you plant this vegetable once and eat off of it for a decade or two decades. It's far less labor, is crucial for the sick and the handicapped and the elderly. No need to seek an annual supply of seeds. You can eat off of it for years, less vulnerable to animals. You don't till it up so you don't get soil erosion. And to be a perennial, you have to be able to not be killed by all the insects, so a lot of resistance. I'll mention two perennial vegetables, and I think my time will be up. Chaya is a very important vegetable in Central America. It's extremely drought tolerant. I took this picture in Haiti. This is that we had sent down there, a chaya plant. It had been 4 months without rain, and yet you can still eat it. It tastes somewhat like collard greens, if any of your southerners are like southern food. The leaves are very easy to pick. This is an orphanage in the Bahamas where we sent some chaya. It's an extremely unlikely place to grow up. In countries that are in severe drought problems, this can be a real big solution. There's just plant after plant that we could tell you about. This is the other one, Katuk, comes from Borneo. I planted this, is at our house. I planted it 28 years ago when we built the house, and we're still eating off of it. It produces far more than we could possibly eat. Want to alert you to the fact that we have an extensive website for agricultural development workers. This is the URL if you want to look at it. You can join and then have full access to almost everything. That's in several languages, most of it in Spanish and French, but a lot of it Oriental languages, some African languages. And I will take any questions if there's any time. There's one other website is ecocommunity.org is for the technical side. To hear about tours or the intern program, just go to econet.org.
And Martin, actually, I have a question.
Okay.
You said that your interns were there for 14 months.
Yes.
It's an extensive intern training program. Do you have anything shorter, like a couple of weeks, for people who are going perhaps on, week or two mission trips with their church who would like additional information, some training but not extensive training?
Yeah, we help call them tropical agriculture and development. They're offered maybe 3-4 times a year, and we limit that to about 20 people. Probably if you're just going for a work team, that wouldn't be a good mix because it is pretty in depth, but you could send a person or two from a work team if you're going.
And how much would that cost for an individual?
I don't know. It'll be on the website.
Okay.
The reason it's 14 months, when it was just 12, the intern arrives, but he never gets to see anything beyond that. So they arrive a month early, that gets them some experience there, and then they get experience at the other end and see a partial change of both seasons.
I see. Okay.
Bonnie?
I was going to say we also have some TAD classes. They're usually about 1 week. Some are general, but like we had one on using bamboo, another week on livestock. And so there are some specialty training also.
Mm. Shorter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're usually about a week. And people can contact. We don't have as many individuals coming down, but there are some opportunities to make arrangements to be there for several days or a week.
And interns are paid $500 a month, health insurance, place to live.
Browse on the farm.
Extremely competitive to get.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, great. I just want to say that I have the opportunity to visit Martin and Bonnie just this past March and a year ago March, and we had a tour of the farm. We had a group of ASA members
from churches, and several colleges for almost 30-some years. Gordon College has sent a group down over spring break. And so there is an opportunity to see the farm, in fact, in a way that you don't in many cases, and really work on the farm and get, you know, exposure. So we do have groups come down like that. It's work-based, but they get to take in a lot.
I have some appointment. I'll be around. Just grab me if you want to talk more about it.
All right. Thank you again. So we'll wait just a few minutes while people change out.
Okay. If they're changing out.
You.
Yeah, you might want to say that. How you got started, how you learned that.
I think that's something outside of the
That's an hour call.
It's 22. Can we go to the recording show?
Yeah, but
if you want to know my personal history, send me an email. It's all written down on that 10-year odyssey and what I learned about guidance and how scary it was. And I'm making a fool of myself here and amazing things that God provided. So, M. Price, but echo that document.